Welcome back to the Damage Report, and we're off to a great start today because I got the name of the show right. So we're already doing better than we were doing on Monday, folks. I've had a few days, I'm wide awake. Speaking of days, today is a big news Wednesday. I know, I'm not JR, not even wearing a hat, but it's still big news Wednesday, and we do have some big news for you all today. We're gonna talk about the news that I'm sure you've all been hearing nothing but since it came out yesterday, the plan to investigate, open an impeachment investigation into Joe Biden over absolutely nothing, and we'll get into just how nothing it really is. We're gonna talk about how Republicans are fighting each other in Arizona over the Senate seat currently occupied by Kyrsten Sinema and what's going on there. We're gonna talk about a win for an abortion clinic, but it's a win that's coming at a time where abortion is being further and further pushed to its extreme on the Republican side in Florida. My cat has made an appearance now, so you know that it's gonna be a good day. We're gonna talk about the Iran prisoner swap, all this and more on this Wednesday. And let's go ahead and get started. Let's jump into this first story about this impeachment.
Our job is to legislate, not to continue to investigate something in the back when you cannot find any reason to impeach this president. She cannot unilaterally decide we're in an impeachment inquiry.
Today, I am directing our House committee to open a formal impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. This logical next step will give our committees the full power to gather all the facts and answers for the American public. That's exactly what we want to know, the answers.
This logical next step is not exactly how I would frame opening this impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. I also think that it's not how the Kevin McCarthy of simply a few days ago would have framed it either, considering he is going back on his word, and we'll get into that in a minute. But let's start, of course, with just the facts of what's going on. And the New York Times reported, Speaker Kevin McCarthy on Tuesday opened an impeachment inquiry into President Biden, working to appease far-right lawmakers who have threatened to oust him if he fails to accede to their demands for deep spending cuts that would force a government shutdown at the end of the month. It continues on, Mr. McCarthy said he would task three committees, Oversight, Judiciary, and Ways and Means, with carrying out the inquiry into the president and his family as Republicans hunt for evidence of financial wrongdoing or corruption. After months of digging, Republicans have found no such proof, though they argue that they have enough information to warrant more investigation. Enough information being nothing. Absolutely nothing. They've got nothing on Joe Biden, but if they just dig a little bit further, surely they'll find it. If we just put a little bit more money, if we just waste a little bit more taxpayer dollars investigating this, if we just stop legislating and doing our jobs and instead focus on this, surely we'll find something. Trump wants us to find something. Surely we'll have to find something eventually. I don't think they will, but that's essentially what they're saying to their voters and to the public. Now, and I think the White House hit the nail on the head when they describe this as extreme politics at its worst. In fact, Ian Sams, the White House spokesperson, put out a statement about this. He said, House Republicans have been investigating the president for 9 months and they've turned up no evidence of wrongdoing. His own Republican members have said so. You'll probably remember on this show, we covered House Freedom Caucus member Ken Buck, while asked about this in an interview on, I believe, MSNBC, said that there was no evidence and no reason to impeach. And we'll get into more about that in a little bit, because he has made further statements more recently. Now, you'll probably also remember Kevin McCarthy said this just a few days ago. We'll pull up this headline from The Hill. McCarthy says he won't open impeachment inquiry without House vote, but wouldn't you know it? Wouldn't you know it? He did exactly that, and we'll get into some of the political implications behind that in a minute. But let's also, before we get there, let's talk about another issue that was outlined by Dana Bash when it comes to this impeachment and their argument there. Let's take a look.
The heart of the impeachment inquiry is about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. This is not about since Joe Biden has been president of the United States. This is pre that.
Yeah.
And so another question is whether that's even a thing. Can you impeach somebody, a president for something that didn't allegedly occur when he was president?
Now, what she's referencing is the fact that most of the information that they're trying to pin as crimes against Joe Biden are stemming from things that happened while he was vice president. They're claiming that he pressured a prosecutor to step down and stop investigating Burisma, which Hunter Biden sat on the board of. You'll remember that from the Trump impeachment trial that happened in during Trump's presidency. Of course, Republicans tried to create a whole show out of that and the, again, limited information they had on that at the time. But she makes an excellent point. Can they impeach Joe Biden for something he did when he wasn't even president? Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the story, the political implications about this. And so let's get into some of those because we're starting to see a divide within the Republican Party. And I say, let them fight. But let's take a look at what Matt Gaetz had to say about this.
This is a baby step following weeks of pressure from House conservatives to do more. We must move faster. No continuing resolutions, individual spending bills or bust, votes on balanced budgets and term limits, subpoenas for Hunter Biden and the members of the Biden family who've been grifting off of this country, and the impeachment for Joe Biden that he so richly deserves. Do these things or face a motion to vacate the chair. And let me alert the country, a motion to vacate might not pass at first, but it might before the 15th vote.
So as many of you will remember, Matt Gaetz was one of the members of the Republican Party who opposed Kevin McCarthy's bid for speakership, although ultimately did end up voting for him to be speaker after rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds of voting in the House. But what he, if you caught on to this, what he's complaining about was that McCarthy wasn't impeaching Joe Biden fast enough. He announced the impeachment, and that was still not enough for Matt Gaetz. And he was threatening to, for anyone who's unfamiliar with the term, vacate the chair, vacate the speaker. What he's threatening is to oust Kevin McCarthy from office or hold votes to oust Kevin McCarthy from office. In fact, in that speech he gave, he said he was going to do it at every option. He said that they're going to do the prayer at the beginning of House sessions. They're going to do the pledge, and then he's going to motion to vacate to get rid of Kevin McCarthy because he hasn't given enough to the far right of the party, which I think is laughable if you know anything about Kevin McCarthy. But incidentally, he's pissed off both the moderates and the far right of his party because here's, as we mentioned at the top of the story, Freedom Caucus member Representative Ken Buck's thoughts on McCarthy's decision.
I think what Kevin McCarthy did in this situation was to take the vote away from the House floor, have the Oversight Committee continue the work that they have been doing for a number of months and really focus on spending. So I think this move by the Speaker is a move to focus on spending. The truth is we should have been focused on spending back in June. President Trump has made it known through his social media account that he wants to see President Biden impeached. I think that has really stirred the base of support in the Republican Party, and I think a lot of members have reacted to that. So I can see Donald Trump enjoying this moment, frankly, and it also distracts a little bit from the four indictments that he is facing at this time.
Now, Ken Buck and other Republicans have insinuated heavily that that this impeachment inquiry is being pushed by Donald Trump in his social media posts. Now, Ken Buck was voicing his dissatisfaction that instead of focusing on, you know, trivial things like funding the government in the Republican Party and the GOP in the House is now focused on these impeachment inquiries that have, again, no evidence backing them up. And I'm joined by Sharon Reed. Sharon, thank you so much for joining me today. I just want to get your thoughts on the divide that's happening now within the Republicans in the House over Kevin McCarthy apparently giving the far right everything they ever wanted at great, you know, at their being upset with him in response to it. I mean, it's funny to see because of course I don't want them to be successful in their endeavors, but not
great. Yeah, I agree. And it's not original. It's what every two parent household already knows. Okay, every time you give in to your child and it's not warranted, it's not earned, this is the end result. Okay, you can't please them, neither the yes parent or the no parent. The speakership has turned into a joke, as is the man who currently occupies the position. How much longer? We don't know. He's not defending Americans. He's not really standing for anything. In fact, if you see Kevin McCarthy waiting at the gas pump, jump in front of him. If he's standing in the buffet line, go ahead and skip ahead and get your plate and do whatever you wish, because that's what he has asked for. No respect, no dignity, no integrity. And I think it is a complete joke. If everyone's mad at you, maybe you're doing something right. Not in this case, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like he's definitely feeling the effects of this at the moment, because he has had to capitulate to the right wing of the party in order to even get in the position he is now to become the speaker. And it looked like for a minute that he was trying to put his foot down during the votes for speakership, but apparently now we know, because Matt Gaetz is sort of outed his business, he did make these deals behind doors to get those votes. And according to the far right, he didn't deliver on these promises fast enough, but he's also now upset the people who were voting for him every single round while he was fighting for the speakership. So definitely become quite a pushover in that regard. So quickly, let's just talk about who is going to be leading this investigation, what it might entail, and how it is inevitably going to end. So let's talk about this Associated Press article. House Republicans, led by Representative James Comer, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, have obtained thousands of pages of financial records from various members of the Biden family and their associates through subpoenas to the Treasury Department and to various financial institutions. Comer has repeatedly claimed, without substantial evidence, I'll add without any evidence, that there is enough in those documents to draw a clear line between Hunter Biden trading on his father's name and policy decisions Biden made while vice president. No such connection has been proven. And with Comer also joined forces in June with a Republican chairman of the Judiciary and Ways and Means Committee to launch a larger investigation into the years-long Justice Department probe of Hunter Biden. The FBI and IRS have been investigating Hunter Biden for years, and the case appeared headed toward a plea deal this summer until a judge rejected the terms of that agreement. Now, Sharon, I think that everyone can agree that Hunter Biden wasn't uniquely qualified to sit on any of these boards. Did he probably get these jobs because his last name is Biden? Yeah, but that's not it doesn't indicate corruption, particularly on Joe Biden's part. So what these Republicans are doing is they're going on a goose chase. They've collected thousands of pages of financial documents in hopes to find just in any way that Joe Biden himself benefited from his son's, you know, positions on these boards or the deals that he was making. And it's just gone nowhere. And I think that politically, this isn't going to help the Republicans. I mean, one, when their candidate of choice is Donald Trump, who, when you're trying to frame the other guy as corrupt, you definitely don't want Donald Trump to be your candidate. I mean, it's such a silly argument, particularly when we're trying to say that he, you know, enriched himself for the benefit of his child and or whatever, however they want to spin it. When Donald Trump put his children in very high positions in the government, I mean, what the hell does Jared Kushner know about the Middle East? It's so silly to me. And I think that it won't play well on the politics side of things the way that the Republicans are hoping it will.
Yeah, well, I don't know. And it depends on who wishes to drink that Kool-Aid, no matter how sick it makes them. What you described is frankly an SNL skit. One that I don't even know would make air that night, but it's a skit. It's ridiculous. And hopefully after all of these years, you know, because you want something for the money. Hopefully they'll come up with something that is more than just an 11-day unloaded gun issue, something about a lie. Because this is cheating the country. It's cheating the country and telling lies. And I just think it's at this point, SNL, there were the unfunny years, and that's perhaps what we're embarking on.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break before we get into this next story. Is pretty long. So let's take a quick break first. We'll jump into this next story when we come back. All right, back on the damage report. Let's get into this next story, the other big story coming out of yesterday's news. Let's start with this video.
If I'm on the other side of a deal where I got five people back and I got released $6 billion that I can now use, I'm thinking, why don't I just take some more people? Because then I could probably get even more money released.
Well, we obviously don't encourage people to travel to Iran. That's not a good place for Americans to be. But if you go to a place like that, and if you get wrongfully detained, you need to know that this administration, this government's gonna do what we have to do to get you home.
So there you saw John Kirby responding to the recent GOP uproar over a prisoner swap deal with Iran. As you may or may not have heard, the United States and Iran seem to be holding to an agreement they reached last month that is set to repatriate 10 total people, 5 Americans and 5 Iranians, and release billions of dollars of Iran's assets that have been frozen. And Al Jazeera reported on this. They wrote that the agreement was reached in August and both sides have confirmed a number of key details. As part of the deal, 5 US prisoners held in Iran will be exchanged with 5 Iranians held by the US, and Iran will gain access to roughly $6 billion of its assets frozen abroad. Now keep in mind, its assets, $6 billion of its assets, because the Republicans would have you believe that we're sending taxpayer, American taxpayer dollars to Iran, which is absolutely not what's happening, but we'll get more into that later. I also want to add that there were concurrent talks happening on plans to heal the Iran nuclear deal, but those talks seem to have stalled, although these ones were successful. But let's get into some information about who is being released, at least what we know so far. As part of the deal, Iran released 4 of the 5 Americans from prison last month and moved them to house arrest. Of the 5, the identities of 3 are confirmed, all having been arrested over charges of espionage and cooperation with a foreign government. Neither side has officially confirmed the identities of the 5 Iranians held by the US. But Washington-based El Monitor reported on Monday that the individuals had been charged with violating unilateral US sanctions on Iran, and a 5th was acting as an unregistered foreign agent of the Iranian establishment. Now, back to the $6 billion. The deal also includes the release of several billions of dollars worth of Iranian money that had been blocked in South Korea for years due to unilateral US sanctions. The money was initially $7 billion, but has now been reduced to $6 billion as a result of currency fluctuations. Now, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that if you've only been listening to right-wing media and right-wing pundits about that $6 billion. Let's take Ben Shapiro, for example, who framed it like this, in quote tweeting an article about the news. Maybe Biden can, maybe he can explain why Biden just gave him $6 billion on the anniversary of 9/11, which I saw this yesterday and have been trying to figure out what Iran has to do with 9/11. And why Ben Shapiro thinks that this is, Joe Biden is just giving this money. I don't know if he actually thinks that or if he just wants his dumb audience to believe that. Of course, Iran had nothing to do with 9/11, so I feel like this is just bred out of, you know, Islamophobia on Ben Shapiro's part. But let's talk a little more about this money. Because again, if you're listening to the right wing media figures, you would think that, you know, you are going to be on the hook for giving money to Iran, which is absolutely not the case. In fact, the assets have been frozen in South Korea because of Donald Trump's actions. As CNBC News reported at the time, President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew from a 2015 nuclear accord with Iran in May 2018 and restored wide-ranging sanctions on the Iranian economy in November of 2018. At the time, his administration granted six-month waivers to eight countries that allowed them to continue importing limited quantities of crude oil from Iran. Senior Biden administration official said the money in South Korea is Iran's. The official said the Trump administration had allowed several other countries like India and Turkey to continue to buy oil from Iran and deposit the funds in special accounts. So that billions of dollars in oil revenue that was frozen in South Korea arose from decisions made by Donald Trump, which makes it even more odd that he would truth this out, I guess you would call it, posted on his social media site, Truth Social. So let's get this straight. We did a hostage trade with Iran, but we gave them five very tough, smart people that they desperately wanted. Again, the identities of the Iranian detainees that are being repatriated hasn't been confirmed. So I don't know what the hell Donald Trump is talking about. He doesn't know who those people are. But he continues, we likewise got back five people, but we also gave them $6 billion. How much of a kickback does crooked Joe Biden get? And continues on with his nonsense drivel. I mean, Donald Trump should know. I don't want to give him too much credit, but he is the reason that these assets were frozen. He should know that we are not giving them money. In fact, they can't even use the money in any way that they want. Let's take a look at this from NBC News. To move forward with the deal, Secretary of State Antony Blinken issued a waiver last week to international banks to allow the transfer of $6 billion in frozen Iranian funds from South Korea to Qatar. The agreement allows Iran to use the money to buy food, medicine, and other humanitarian items allowed by United States economic sanctions. So Sharon, I mean, this framing by the right wing is so disingenuous. I feel like maybe they're just trying to hype this story up to more than it is, an attempt to deflect from Donald Trump's indictments. I mean, another reason why I think they were impeaching Joe Biden at this moment as opposed to sometime in the future, in the past. But I mean, there's just not that much to it.
Yeah, there isn't. And you know, Donald Trump never really read the materials or the briefings, but he might not know that it's been going on for a very long time. And this is indeed Iran's money. Okay, it's there. Money and it's just unfrozen. And as you said, there's still restrictions on it. But this is the same party, remember, who you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Criticized for, you know, Paul Whelan and other hostages around the world. You're not doing enough to get these brave Americans home. And then when it came to Brittany Griner, why are you doing so much here? Why are we giving away, you know, so much here? So again, on the one hand, you're not doing enough. On the other hand, you're doing too much and be damn the facts. And if he wants to know how much of a kickback, perhaps he should check his own wire transfers or call up Jared and maybe say, hey, did you, when this went down, how much did you get? Or Ivanka and the trade, the patents, you know, from China. It's stunning to me. You know, Joe Biden has made it clear, I'm going to do what it takes to bring these Americans home. It's going to be a priority. You may not know everything in real time. You can agree with that or not, but at least in the supporting documentation where you support your position, at least be honest. But some people are incapable of it.
Right. And they do have to frame it like, especially, and I think you bring up a great example of Brittany Griner, right? They had to frame it like, we're releasing the single most evil person from American prison ever who's going to go back and immediately be involved, you know, in every major crime happening in Russia, which was so silly because They had never heard of this guy who they started referring to as the merchant of death before. They were just mad that Brittany Griner was released because she wasn't sufficiently patriotic. They would never mention the fact that so many women basketball players have to go overseas to play during the American offseason because they're not being paid enough while they're playing here in the United States. But she didn't bow down to the US flag sufficiently. So you know, God forbid we get a United States citizen out of an unfair detention. I mean, oh, Republicans, they definitely drive me insane. This next story about Republicans puts a smile on my face because the girlies are fighting. You all remember Blake Masters, who ran and lost a Senate seat during the 2022 midterms. Blake Masters, loser, is apparently planning to run again for the Senate, although this time for the seat currently occupied by Kyrsten Sinema, who's switched her affiliation to independent. But there is a problem for Blake Masters and his plan, because fellow Arizona loser Carrie Lake is also looking at running for that same seat. And according to some new reports, they've been feuding behind the scenes. They had an exceptionally contentious phone call this weekend. And let's get into some of the details that were reported by the Daily Beast on that phone call. On Saturday night around 11 p.m., Lake called Masters to have a conversation. Earlier in the day, the New York Times published a report revealing that former President Donald Trump had spoken to Masters about a week ago to discuss his Senate plans. And the Daily Beast had just published a story only a few hours before the call on how Masters may be having second thoughts about running. Sources familiar with the conversation said the call lasted about 10 minutes, describing the discussion as intense, paranoid, and erratic. The call, which Lake initiated after speaking at a fundraiser in Florida, started with Lake pressing Masters on why he's been floating his name as a possible candidate for the Senate seat. Now, I think that these stories are so interesting because people who work for them and had information on this call are the ones who have to leak it, right? So to some extent, you know that one or both of these potential Senate candidates wanted this phone call to be public information, because the people who are, you know, going to be close enough to them to have either literally overheard the phone call or to be, you know, debriefed on the phone call by these candidates, you know, they're not going to be released to be giving these statements to the Daily Beast unless the candidates themselves, or in this case, the potential candidates, want that information out there. So they're fighting and they want this information public. Let's get some more information from this phone call, from that Daily Beast article. Have your intentions changed? Lake asked Masters. Masters said he doesn't intend to run again. Lake, if she gets into the race. But he pressed Lake, who unsuccessfully ran for governor in Arizona, on why she hadn't announced her Senate campaign yet. Masters said he thought Lake was wasting time by not announcing, according to one of the sources familiar with the call. You should have been in this race yesterday, Masters said. The phone call wasn't all advice. Among a number of spirited moments, there was plenty of score settling. Lake said she and her campaign did as much as they could to help Masters in the 2022 race. And you ran and hid under the bed as soon as the election was over, Lake allegedly said. Now, the conversation got particularly salty, for lack of a better word, when Masters apparently told Lake that he didn't believe she could win the Senate race and that he would. From Daily Beast, Masters told Lake she needed to move to the center a little bit on tone, not policy. Masters also told Lake she needed to surround herself with people that have a little skepticism and don't just drink the Kool-Aid. The source added he also allegedly told Lake that he didn't think she'd been taking the Senate race seriously, noting that she's pursued other opportunities like potentially being Trump's 2024 vice presidential nominee. Now, Lake isn't the only person who doesn't want Masters to run. Apparently, Trump himself called Masters, saying that he didn't think he could beat Carrie Lake in the race. Now, Carrie Lake did get significantly more votes for governor than Masters did while he was running for Senate on the same ballot. But Sharon, I think the funniest part of this is the conversation ended with Carrie Lake demanding that Masters agree with her that the gubernatorial election was stolen from her, which I feel like is just such strong evidence that Carrie Lake has really fallen into this like Trump. She's descended into the Trumpian madness that her election must have also been stolen from her. And everyone needs to agree with that. Otherwise, they are, you know, written out of her book.
Yeah. That's a hell of a book. And when is she going to look forward? Okay, this was an incredible phone call. You're right, with lots of saltiness. I counted, you know, 10 minutes. I think he said the call lasted. That's like an insult every 90 seconds between these two. And the thing about it to me is, if Trump is backing Lake, which his phone call a day or so earlier seems to indicate, that's the best thing for Masters. It really is the best thing for him. It does seem like she'll pick anything, okay? It could be leader of a Girl Scouts troop next, whatever seems hot at the time and has one of those glow lights. It's a strange cesspool that this whole thing has devolved into, and who knows where the bottom is. Can someone tell us where the bottom is and give us the recipe to this Kool-Aid that they're drinking? What is in this Kool-Aid that keeps them all so dishonest?
And I think for Carrie Lake, it's interesting because I think he makes a good point to some extent, to the idea that he does make a point at all, that she has situated herself to, you know, be in a position to be Trump's vice president. And I think that her continued, you know, drinking of that Kool-Aid has put her in his good graces continuously, whereas other people, other members of the party who have been insufficiently loyal have maybe lost that. But what is, you know, the end goal? I don't think that she'll win the Senate race. And, you know, it's shaping up to be interesting because it looks like if Kyrsten Sinema runs as an independent, then she will be siphoning votes away, not from the Democrat candidate Gallegos, but away from Carrie Lake or Blake Masters or whoever ends up being the Republican on the ticket. So actually a lot of Democrats are pressuring her to run. So to be a spoiler, I think is really interesting. But you know, it's for me, it's eventually there's going to be a Republican Party. There has to be eventually post Trump, whether it's because he's locked up behind bars or because his unhealthy habits and his age have finally caught up to him and he passes away. Not saying that I want that to happen, but I mean, inevitably death comes for all of us. You know, so eventually there will be a Republican Party post Trump, and people like Carrie Lake, I think, have put themselves in a lane where there's no political future. There's no professional future, right? Because she, you know, was a TV host, a news personality. That's gone unless she wants to work at whatever the next iteration of OAN is at the time, if that's something she, you know, is interested in going back to. I mean, I don't know, Sharon. I feel like I've seen so many of these Republican politicians just bury their head in the sand and put themselves so firmly in the Trump camp. You know, change their personalities to resemble him. And then what is the end goal? Because this will come to an end, in my opinion. I don't know, maybe you see things differently.
Well, I think it's cloudy because it won't end until, as you mentioned, he ends in one way or another. Because we've seen people jump off the train just briefly before getting on at the next stop, whether it was after January 6th and Lindsey Graham and Kevin McCarthy, but it has not ended yet. And with no viable prospects, but maybe some speaking fees and fundraising, she has to, in many ways, I think, stay hitched to the MAGA train, because where else, as you mentioned, is she going to go? But I would love to see that three-way race, Sinema, okay, Masters and Lake and a debate. I would love to just see that debate while the Democrats over there just kind of waiting on whoever's gets the trophy, if you will. That would be rich.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that at the end of this feud, Masters and Lake will both end up the losers. And you're right, the Democrat who's just been biding his time, winning favor amongst, you know, the voters, because he announced his candidacy a long time ago, is going to end up the winner, whether, you know, at least hopefully you know, electorally, at least politically. But we'll have to keep an eye on that as things develop in Arizona and see where that goes. With that, we have to go to our second break. So we'll see you all on the other side with some more stories about interesting arrests of InfoWars correspondents. All right, we're back on the damage report, and I absolutely love this next story. So let's not waste any time and let's get right into it. InfoWars host Owen Schroyer was sentenced on Tuesday to 2 months behind bars for joining the mob's riot at the US Capitol on January 6th, of course. Prosecutors said he helped create the riot by spewing violent rhetoric and spreading baseless claims of election fraud to hundreds of thousands of viewers. And it does make me sick to my stomach, the idea that hundreds of thousands of people are watching InfoWars. Please, please, please turn that computer off. If that is your grandma out there watching Alex Jones, just unplug her router. She'll never figure out how to plug it back in. Now, Owen pleaded guilty in June to illegally entering a restricted area, which is a misdemeanor punishable by a maximum sentence of 1 year behind bars. And I do want to stress what I just said again. He pleaded guilty. He admitted that he violated the law, which you would not, that would not be your takeaway if you were just seeing how the Republicans, how the conservatives are framing his sentencing. But Associated Press reported the actual facts of the story. They wrote that prosecutors said Schroyer used his online platform and later a megaphone outside the Capitol on January 6, 2021 to amplify lies that Democrats stole the 2020 presidential election from Donald Trump, who is the Republican incumbent. Now, Schroyer, as everyone at InfoWars and in right-wing media will make sure that you know, didn't actually enter the Capitol, which is true, but he did lead a march to the building and led those rioters in chants near the top of the building steps. And I think another aspect of the story that's important to point out is that he was legally not allowed to be near the Capitol. Because back in, I believe, 2019, he interrupted a hearing, a congressional hearing, and a court ordered him to stay away from the Capitol. So he was already not allowed to be there and went even further and entered restricted grounds. He knew he wasn't allowed to be near the Capitol at or near the Capitol and still led these people in chants and marched them to the steps. Now, he's among only a few people who have been charged in the riot who didn't go inside the building and weren't accused of engaging in violence or destruction. So let's talk about what he actually did on January 6th. Schroyer didn't need to set foot inside the Capitol because many of his followers did, prosecutors argued. They said Schroyer spread election disinformation and thinly veiled calls to violence on January 6th to InfoWars viewers in the weeks leading up to the attacks. Outside the Capitol, Schroyer stood in front of a crowd with a megaphone and yelled, "The Democrats are posing as communists, but we know what they really are." I'm sorry, I read this this morning, I'm reading it again now, it still stumps me. The Democrats are posing as communists. Which ones? Nancy Pelosi, I don't think she fancies herself a communist. But anyway, he continued on, "But we know what they really are, they're just tyrants. They're tyrants. And so today on January 6th, we declare death to tyranny, death to tyrants." Schroyer also led hundreds of rioters in chants of USA in 1776. Now, his defense had this, what I think is a laughable excuse. Schroyer told US District Judge Timothy Kelly that he wasn't part of any plan for violence or other illegal activity on January 6th. He also said he wasn't trying to stir up the crowd with his chants. It was to get the attention and draw the crowds away, he said. Now, Sharon, I guess the contention with this trial was not whether or not he did it, because he did what he admitted he did what he had been accused of, which was trespassing. It was just whether or not they could justify sentencing him, which is where the argument comes from that he was involved, that he was leading them to the Capitol, that he was leading them a chance. He intended for harm to happen. There was harm that happened, so that he should have to go to jail for some period of time. Conservatives had to flip this around and say he's being falsely imprisoned for wrongthink, for his constitutional right, First Amendment right, has been violated, which of course I think is silly, but it seems to have taken root in these right wingers. I mean, I don't know, what are your thoughts?
I have a driver's license, and if I drive other bank robbers to the bank and just remain with the car going and gassed up, ready to exit, I'm gonna get charged, okay? And this is nothing. He should shut up, and so should they. It's basically, my detox is longer than 60 days, and he probably won't even be in there that long, okay? Do the time you did the crime. It's crazy.
Especially considering he's admitting he did it. He pleaded guilty. He said he did it. So the idea that he deserves no jail time to me is silly. This is someone who still works for InfoWars. He hasn't shown any remorse. He still
hasn't been suspended by Alex Jones. Nothing.
Which is interesting, because a lot of people are now looking at why hasn't Alex Jones been, you know, prosecuted for anything. I don't think that that's coming down the line necessarily for him. I think that it's a good question to raise, though. But let's take a look quickly at Schroyer's reaction to the sentencing.
We're assuming that we're going to be able to appeal. It'd be like almost as shocking as the incarceration, almost as shocking as the sentence if they didn't let me appeal. But I mean, at this point, you know, who knows?
Right.
They may deny the appeal. And I will also tell you that we believe that this is an important enough case to make it to the Supreme Court. And maybe that's where we prefer this case ends up, is at the Supreme Court, because we believe it is that big of a free speech issue.
I wish I had some more insightful commentary than just literally laughing out loud at that claim, but I can't help it. You know, I've, as someone who's gone through law school, I know that there's no way in hell that his goofy, laughable appeal for sentencing is somehow going to reach the Supreme Court of the United States. It absolutely will not. It's 2 months in jail. You go to jail for 2 months. It's not that long. It will make you a martyr in the eyes of your audience anyway. Just go. But of course, he has these sympathizers. We've got Mike Cernovich, who tweeted this out. Owen Schroyer didn't go into the Capitol. He didn't break any laws, which is not true, which is so not true. I'm sorry, that's such the dumbest argument you could possibly make, because he admits he broke the law. He went into a restricted area, he trespassed, it was illegal. It's as simple as that. He admitted he did it, but he also wasn't even allowed to be that close to the Capitol. He was well aware of the court order to stay away from the Capitol that had been in place for over a year at that point. He couldn't be there. He knew that. That's why he pled guilty. But let me, you know, continue with the idiotic spewings of Mike Cernovich. He said he had previously been arrested for peacefully and silently standing inside a building, which is absolutely not what happened, which Democrats do daily. DOJ said he violated his agreement by marching on January 6th. He is a political prisoner. Again, two months in prison. He's not going away for 22 years. He should be grateful that he's not getting the sentencing. Of course, it wouldn't be possible. His charges were not nearly as severe as the charges of the other January 6th rioters who did enter the building. But some people are staring down 22 years. He's staring down 2 months. He'll be okay. He'll come out the other side. Charlie Kirk also defended him. He wrote, the DOJ is asking for 120 days, oh sorry, excuse me, I misspoke. 120 days of federal prison for Owen Schroyer for trespassing. BS, this is an outrage. Day one of a Trump second term, I will personally lobby for all peaceful January 6th defendants to get pardons and their lives back. And I mean, Sharon, I think there's something so gross to me about framing these people as political prisoners, because there are in this world actual political prisoners, people who are being illegally detained in countries all over the world for, you know, staging peaceful protests or teaching people how to organize, you know, in other countries, you know, for violating, you know, for speaking out against human rights atrocities, are being held in jail unfairly. But these people who all actually committed very real crimes are being framed as political prisoners, and having these Republicans, you know, talk about police reform and prison reform, but only in cases for these people who are, you know, who are apparently political prisoners. It just makes me feel a little bit sick.
It makes me sick too. And where's his pride? And I mean, of a devious kind, okay? He was there, he pumped up this mob, he fueled the fire of this mob. And then he said really nutty things, really dumb things like, no, Judge, I was just there to redirect them away from the Capitol. I'm a hero, Judge. And after he left, he said other goofball comments like, yeah, you know, the judge just doesn't understand how to manage these large crowds. Again, that he incited, built up, helped work into a frenzy really for weeks ahead of this. But there, right there on the scene where you point out eloquently, he wasn't supposed to be. That part was a simple trespass case. He turned it into a lot more with his mouth. And I don't know why he doesn't just stand for it. Like you said, it's not 23 years, it's 6 months. Be proud, eat the bologna sandwich, and do your time.
And I think I'm really glad you brought that point up, that he was trying to frame it as though he was, you know, moving the crowd away. There is a video of it.
Yeah.
There's a video of this happening. We know what happened. We saw what happened. He absolutely was not trying to get this crowd away from the Capitol as he is marching them to the literal steps, chanting things, you know, like, we're gonna take back our country from tyrants. Is that something that you say as you're, you know, just pushing them away? You're trying to protect the Capitol? I mean,
them. He was trying to trick them.
Right. he was doing his patriotic duty to protect the Capitol that day. He stood outside there with the megaphone saying, "No, leave." But of course they'll do their crimes on camera and then lie about them because they know that they're catering to the lowest common denominators in their audiences, and they think that they won't be fact checked. But that is all the time we have for that. We will be back on the other side with the aftermath. So if you're on linear, switch over to YouTube or Twitch, or head over to our website, tyt.com/live, and we'll see you over there. Paul Eraser says, I have a feeling that the only way this will end is if these idiots on the right are voted out next year. Hopefully that's what happens. Let's mobilize to make sure that that happens, in fact, especially as we're seeing all of these attacks on, you know, civil rights from the right wing. The best thing we could do is ensure that they're voted out. Paul Eraser says, I think the Republicans were hoping to find a way to appropriate Iran's assets for their own use. I mean, they were frozen. I don't think the Republicans would have a way to access them, but I wouldn't put it past them to attempt to do that. Definitely seems like something that they would try. Adent Hitchhiking Dragon said, Griner wasn't sufficiently straight, white, and male for the Republicans to care about. Absolutely. I'm 100%. I'm more than 100% sure, if that's possible, that that the fact that she was a gay black woman had a role to play in the way that Republicans saw the value of rescuing her from her, or bringing her back home from her detention in Russia. Trista on the member section says, how about we unilaterally remove all economic sanctions imposed around the world? One, they have not changed the behaviors of bad actors and have only antagonized and emboldened our enemies. Economic sanctions hurt everyday people and not governments. I mean, one interesting thing about the story that with Iran that we covered was that technically banks have been allowed to do business with Iran during these sanctions in order to ensure that medicine gets to Iran and that food gets there. But they have been reticent to do so because they were afraid that they were going to be found in violation of the sanctions. So instead of, you know, putting themselves at risk, they chose not to do any business, not to engage at all, which definitely came back to hurt innocent everyday people of Iran who needed access to those things. So there's definitely a strong argument to be made there. Gabby Morita says, Carrie Lake, AKA American Strategic Vaseline Research. I really enjoyed covering the story about Carrie Lake interview with Piers Morgan, where, you know, you don't expect Piers Morgan necessarily to, you know, go that hard against a right winger, but he really just looked her dead in her eyes and said, you're lying, you're a liar, and we need more of that. It felt good.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.